Okay, good morning. Thank you all for coming. I know that there has been a choice of presentations this morning, and I'm very grateful for you choosing to come to ours. This is the annual results presentation for the 52 weeks ended the 14th of September 2013. The format is as before, as in prior years. I'll go through the financial and the business highlights before John will take you through the income statement, the balance sheet, the cash flow, and the segmental analysis before I return to give you my take on our operations business by business. So if I start with the financial highlights, which many of you will have seen by now, group revenues solidly ahead 9% to 13.3 billion, adjusted operating profit up 10%, adjusted profit before tax up 13%, and adjusted earnings per share then also up 13% to 98.9 pence. Dividends per share, which we will, the dividend which we'll be recommending to shareholders in December, up 12% to 32 pence. It's been another year of heavy capital investment. We've spent £600 million on new plant and equipment across the group. And we're very pleased that net debt has reduced by about £200 million to £804 million at year end. So it's been another year of strong growth and strong cash generation. We've seen a remarkable performance by Primark. The grocery group, we're delighted, is also much improved. It's the result, been the result of a lot of hard work by teams all over the world. We've had a record profit from our agricultural businesses and well done them. AB Sugar is down, but in line with our expectations. And then we've had a difficult year in our Chinese sugar business. And also we've been busy getting on rationalising some of the ingredients portfolio in the group. John, if I could hand over to you now.
Thanks, George. Good morning, everyone. Group revenue increased by 9% to £13.3 billion, and adjusted operating profit was up by 10% at £1185 million. Neither acquisitions nor disposals had a material effect on the results. Movements in foreign exchange rates had no significant effect on revenues, but at constant currency, adjusted operating profit was 12% ahead. A table of average and year-end exchange rates is included at the end of your slide pack. The average rates used to translate the income statement show a slight weakening of sterling against the US dollar and euro, but a strengthening against the Australian dollar and more significantly against the rand. The year-end rates reflect a similar pattern. The adjusted profit measure reflects the underlying performance of the business and excludes profits less losses on disposal of non-current assets and the amortisation of non-operating intangibles. This amortisation covers those intangible assets acquired since September 2004, and the charge was £92 million this year compared with £100 million last year. Last year's exceptional charge of £98 million, just to remind you, related to the impairment of the assets of the meat business in Australia. Unadjusted operating profit increased by 25% to £1093 million. The income statement this year includes a loss on the sale and closure of businesses of £128 million. You will already be aware of two items included here. £26 million arising on the disposal of our US whey protein business and £15 million on the disposal of our sugar factory in Shifeng, North China, both losses including the write-off of associated goodwill. Following the decision at the year-end to discontinue yeast extract manufacture in Harbin, China, a charge of £72 million has been taken to write down the carrying value of ingredients assets, together with restructuring costs. A charge of £13 million was also taken to write down the value of our yeast plants in India, where it's becoming more difficult to meet the increasingly strict regulatory requirements for waste discharge. Net interest expense shows a substantial reduction from 105 to 87 million. This mainly reflected the strong cash flow in the year. We also redeemed British Sugar's 10.75% debenture on the 4th of July, but this will have more of an impact in the coming year, in 2014. Profit before tax was 15% higher than last year at 876 million. Adjusted for the items referred to earlier, we delivered a 13% pre-tax increase from 974 to 1096 million pounds. Profit attributable to non-controlling interests was higher this year, largely as a result of the increased profitability of our African sugar operations. An explanation of the increase in the tax charge is now explained in more detail. Looking at the separate components of the tax charge, the main reason for the increase in the reported charge from 23.4% to 27.6% is that last year's rate included a 29 million deferred tax credit on the exceptional item. The tax credit on the amortisation of goodwill and intangibles fell from 33 to 29 million, driven by this year's lower amortisation charge. The underlying rate actually fell from 24.8% to 24.2%. And that 24.2% is much lower than the 25.7% used at the half year. The half year rate did not reflect the benefit to deferred tax arising from the phased reduction in the UK corporation tax rate to 20%, which hadn't been enacted at the interim balance sheet date, but obviously has been since. We expect next year's underlying tax rate to be similar, if not slightly lower, than this year. Next year's current tax charge will benefit from the 2% reduction in the UK statutory rate from 23% to 21%, which is effective from the 1st of April 2014. Adjusted earnings per share increased by 13% to 98.9 pence. We will be adopting the revised IAS 19 for pension costs in 2014, which will see the restatement of our 2013 financial statements to reflect the new treatment of administration costs and the use of the discount rate when calculating the income on scheme assets rather than the expected rate of return. These changes will reduce our 2013 adjusted operating profit by 4 million and increase the other financial expense by 3 million. Adjusted earnings per share for 2013 will then be restated to 98.2 pence. Earnings per share were 6% ahead of last year at 74.8 pence. A final dividend of 22.65p per share has been proposed, making a total dividend for the year of 32 pence, a 12% increase. Dividend cover on an adjusted basis is just over 3x. Now, turning to the balance sheet. Net assets were 276 million higher at 6.5 billion pounds. After sterling weakness over the last few years, sterling was stronger against a number of currencies this year, which gave rise to a net loss of 134 million on the translation of overseas net assets. Intangibles, you'll notice, are 188 million lower than last year, and that's as a result of the following. The amortisation charged in the year, but then also goodwill written off for businesses sold and on translation losses. And those far exceeded the additions to operating intangibles in the year. PP&E and other non-current assets were only 20 million higher. Capital additions exceeded depreciation actually by 183 million, but impairment charges, primarily related to the closure of businesses and translation losses, virtually offset this increase. Working capital at the year end was 58 million higher than last year, and higher stock at Primark as a result, with higher stock at Primark, as a result of the increase in retail square footage. Average working capital, expressed as a percentage of sales during the year, importantly showed a further improvement. And you've probably seen that for a few years now. The strong cash generation drove net debt £257 million lower at the year-end to £804 million. The group has total committed borrowing facilities amounting to £2.4 billion, of which £1 billion was drawn down at the year-end. The very expensive British Sugar debenture was redeemed in July, and also $120 million US dollars of private placement notes were also repaid. The group's net deferred tax liability fell by £26 million, and that's primarily as a result of the enacted phased reduction in the UK corporation tax rate. Provisions fell during the year by 59, driven by the settlement of deferred consideration on acquisitions made in prior years, and that was partly offset by new provisions being created for restructuring. Net pension liability reduced from 95 to 44 million, with the value of scheme assets increasing by more than the scheme liabilities. Coming on to cash flow. Look, our cash flow performance was, again, I think, really strong. Free cash flow was 134 million higher than last year, and that was an inflow of 579 million compared with last year's inflow of 445 million. And the main drivers were a higher adjusted operating profit, a higher add-back for depreciation and amortisation, and a lower level of capital expenditure. And that's net of a working capital outflow of 97 million this year, compared with last year's inflow of 43. This year's reduction in the level of capital expenditure at Primark may come as a surprise to you. It's not an indication that our expansion is slowing. If anything, it's actually increasing, but is a result of phasing. 2012 included much of the expenditure on the major extensions and refits completed in the UK in 2013, and some spend that we actually expected at the end of the 2013 financial year was delayed into the beginning of the current financial year. I expect the investment in Primark in 2014 to be ahead of the spend in 2012. Capital expenditure in food declined again this year, and a number of projects were completed, particularly in ingredients and sugar. I expect further reduction in the food capital expenditure next year. Tax paid increased from 191 to 252 million. This is due in part to the group's increased profitability this year. However, a substantial proportion of the difference also relates to the payment this year of 50% of the tax due on last year's big increase in profit in the UK. This year saw the last payment of 30 million additional contribution to the UK defined benefit scheme, arising from the five-year deficit reduction plan agreed with the regulator in 2008. So this was the last year that we saw that 30 million. The next actuarial valuation of the scheme is due in April 2014. On the 1st of October 2012, new legislation came into effect, which required all eligible UK employees to be automatically enrolled into a qualifying pension scheme. We conducted an extensive awareness campaign in the months leading up to our selected implementation date of the 1st of February 2013, and that resulted in an additional 15,000 employees joining the existing defined contribution section of the scheme. The additional costs in 2013 have been borne in operating profit. No new acquisitions were made in the year, but deferred consideration payable on acquisitions made in previous years amounted to 71 million this year, and proceeds from disposals amounted to 35 million. This caption also includes investments in and loans to joint ventures. So turning now to the performance analysis by business segment. Revenue growth was again achieved in all segments. Profit was strongly ahead in grocery and Primark, and agriculture had a record year. Profit from sugar held up well and was in line with expectations, although down on last year, as we had signalled. On an underlying basis, the result from ingredients was in line with last year. Notice that the sales and profits of the US whey proteins business, which was sold during the year, are shown separately on the business's disposed line. Grocery benefited not only from the reduction in restructuring charges taken last year in Australia and the UK bakeries, but also from good underlying trading. Primark's margin at 12%, probably better than most of you had, benefited from the first half from reduced cotton costs and lower markdowns actually all year. Overall, the group return on capital employed improved from 17.0% to 18.4% for continuing businesses, with grocery and Primark more than offsetting a decline in sugar. Moving on to the segmental analysis by geography, revenue, profit and margin growth was achieved by three of the four regions. I want to point out, because I'm pleased with the scale and improvement in profit in Europe and Africa, which was driven both by Primark in continental Europe and Illovo, and it also absorbed the 21 million charge for rationalisation of dry yeast capacity in Italy, and it was still ahead by that number. The losses in Asia Pacific were caused by Chinese sugar. So there we've got the 22 million charge for mothballing the two factories and a decrease in underlying profitability. This number actually masks the much improved performance from George Weston Foods in Australia. So we'll now look at the performance of each of our businesses in more detail, and I'll pass over to George.
Thank you very much. And we start with sugar. We were very pleased with the progress that the sugar businesses made, taken together. We saw lower European production and high UK beet costs. However, good progress in Illovo, I'll come back to, significantly lower prices in China, which I will also take you through in a moment. Most important, and the reason for my confidence in the business, the performance improvement programme, which I think I talked about first last year, is now firmly established across all the parts of the sugar business, and is giving us a very meaningful operational cost improvements right across the AB sugar business. If we turn to the EU sugar, that's British Sugar and Azucarera, sugar prices remained strong through the year, and we were pleased with that. You'll remember how wet last year was, both through the summer and then into autumn. That resulted in lower beet yields in the UK and a tough time in the factories processing that sugar. They did a very good job, as we've come to expect, in extracting sugar from difficult beet, but it was still a struggle throughout the year. Good field yields in Spain, that is important to us looking forward into regime reform. It's important that Spanish field yields remain high and, if anything, grow yet further. Sugar beet is grown under irrigation and is more expensive as a consequence of that irrigation, and yields need to compensate for that extra cost. Looking forward into sugar regime reform, we had confirmation in June 2013 that the regime would change not in 2015, which was the original intention, but in September 2017. The two most important aspects of that change will be the following. The first one is domestic quotas will cease, and the second is that the sugar import tariff of 92 euros per tonne will remain in place. We expect to see European sugar production increase, and with that increase, prices to come down further. We'll see growth in production from the most efficient producers. We believe we have two of them in British Sugar and Azucarera, but in both businesses, further efficiency improvement is absolutely imperative. Profitability will be determined very largely by the difference in efficiency level between the least and the most efficient surviving European sugar producers. We think the market is already adjusting, is already anticipating the increased sugar supply, and prices are adjusting at the moment, partly at least as a consequence of that. In Illovo, production was ahead of last year. We're very encouraged by the recovery in volumes of sugar produced in South Africa. We came out of a period of 2 years drought, and particular concerns about the sustainability of sugar production in southern KwaZulu-Natal, the coastal area, seem to be increasingly marginal, but has recovered very strongly in the last year. You'll remember the investments we've made in the factories and the cane estates in Zambia and Swaziland. Both those businesses performed extremely well, and we were delighted to see that. In an era of declining world market prices, we saw relative price stability, good price stability, throughout the region that we sell sugar into in Africa. Co-product development is important to us in Illovo. In a number of areas, we're investing in the development of co-product revenue streams. We completed in June this year a major potable alcohol distillery in Tanzania. This is John's holiday snap of it. The tanks to the right, with a man standing on the top of them, are molasses tanks. The one to the left contain neat alcohol. The customer for all the production of this facility is SAB Miller. The commissioning went extremely well. That plant is up and running at design capacity already, and well done the teams in Tanzania for achieving that. If I can move on then, lastly under sugar, to China. We saw both higher domestic production and also significantly higher imports into the Chinese market. The domestic production increase would not have been a problem for prices, would not have put too much downward pressure on prices, because demand in sugar for sugar in China is now safely clear of any level of likely domestic production. It was the higher imports that created a great overhang of supply in the Chinese market and consequently lower prices. We have rapidly addressed the cost base as faced with the squeeze between what we pay for beet and cane and the prices that we can secure for sugar. We've mothballed two factories in the north of China and sold a third one. There's another wave of cost reduction overhead in both the north and the south, and also in the center. We have an office in Beijing. Significant factory efficiencies, particularly labor efficiencies, are being worked at the moment, and the overheads, as I say, have been reduced substantially. The good news is that prices now in the Chinese market are above their low point. They're being pulled up, I think, by the increase in world market prices. So we're through the lowest point in pricing, and we have a business which is now much lower cost, significantly lower cost, than the one we had only a year ago or so. If I can move on then to agriculture, which made £47 million for us, a number which is much, much higher than I think either John and I would have ever expected this business to make a few years ago. It's been a consequence of strong performance in the UK feed businesses. We brought together two commodity businesses into one, which we call AB Connect, 2 years ago now. We saw good synergy benefits from that work coming through in this year. We also enjoyed higher molasses sugar beet prices in the UK market over the last 12 months. Frontier, the joint venture we own with Cargill, very successfully marketed an awfully difficult grain crop, cereal crop. The quality of the crop last year was the worst I think anyone had seen since the 1970s, and Frontier really showed its quality as an organisation in successfully marketing that crop on behalf of the UK farmers.
The two specialist ingredient parts of our feed business, AB Vista and Premier Nutrition, grew strongly through the year. Those businesses go from strength to strength. And lastly, in agriculture, we saw a good improved profit delivery from our feed businesses in China. Moving next then to our grocery portfolio, strong profit increase, 24%, a consequence of two factors, both of which John has already mentioned. The first is a reduction in last year's restructuring costs, but then a good underlying improvement, in part because of those restructuring costs, in part also because of good trading developments across the portfolio. Twinings Ovaltine was excellent once more. George Weston Foods much improved. They're well on the journey to sustained profitability. And we also saw significant developments in Allied Bakeries, which I will take you through in just a moment. Twinings Ovaltine first then. It's the most profitable part of our grocery portfolio. Both brands, Twinings and Ovaltine, saw good gains in market share in their major markets. Twinings in particular, we were delighted with very strong market share growth in the United States, in the UK and Australia. And then Ovaltine, further progress in South America and Asia. Thailand was a bit more difficult. We were lapping the floods of the prior year, and the market and the recession in that country has also, I think, suppressed demand somewhat. But Ovaltine, taken as a whole, had another good year. Behind the commercial success of both brands, there now lies a well-invested global supply chain for both businesses. So Twinings has the factories in UK, Poland and China, and Ovaltine, Switzerland, China and Thailand. The work of creating that supply chain, those supply chains, has taken us several years, but it's been a job very well done. Turning next to Australia, much improved performance from both Tip Top and Don. Tip Top first, satisfying margin improvement, good job recovering wheat cost inflation during the year, and then very good work building on brands in what is still a very branded bread market. The one we've talked about in the past is a complete nutritional package in white bread, and there's been some brand extension there. And then Abbott's, which is an important whole meal brand for us, has had an extremely good year. On the back, I have to say, of some really innovative, excellent advertising, part of which I propose to show you now.
It's beautiful, isn't it? We believe they should be able to enjoy all of this. We only ever feed them the good stuff, just grain-fed. We just let nature do its work. Oh, but Frank's pretty handy to have around too. We raise them free range, so you can taste the difference.
It's lovely to see bread of advertising that isn't boring. Back then and on to Don KRC, the business that's given us a lot of trouble over the last few years. We succeeded in selling more through the year, so more volumes going through the factory. The factory responds well to higher volumes. And the factory conversion costs, which have been an issue for us, have reduced in the year very substantially. We're not all the way through that journey of cost reduction yet, but the team there is taking great strides, and we have a lot more confidence in Don KRC than perhaps was the case just a year ago. Allied Bakeries. It won't come as any surprise for me to tell you that Allied Bakeries enjoyed life in a competitive market once more. This is just the nature of the UK bread market. We did though see volume growth in the business. Kingsmill would be safely and securely the number two bread brand in the UK, even without the co-op supply chain contract, the winning of which was the consequence of many years' work, and which we were absolutely delighted by. We are a good supplier now to the co-op, reliable, consistent, and reactive supplier to that important business. We're coming to the end of a six-year capital programme. We have rebuilt, either refurbished or completely replaced, nine bread lines across the country. It's not just the bread lines themselves that we've been replacing or repairing. It's also all the handling systems that go around bread, in particular the flour handling and the minor ingredient handling. The latest completed project, it's commissioning now, is this one at West Brom. I showed you Walthamstow, I think, at the half year. West Brom, as I say, is now commissioning ahead of time and on budget. The point is simply that there's a lot of shiny steel there, and it transforms the cost base, the quality of the bread, the consistency, the reliability of operations each time we do this. In terms of the journey we've been on, then, the green dots are bakeries which are now complete. Glasgow, Stockport, Stoke-on-Trent, Walthamstow and West Brom is just about to go green. That leaves us with Stevenage, where we're already underway, and by the end of this year, we'll just about be there. It's been a very major exercise. It's been magnificently delivered by the team at Allied Bakeries, and it sets us fair for many years to come in the bread business in the UK. Elsewhere in our grocery portfolio in the UK, good growth at Ryvita, at Jordan's, at Patax, at Blue Dragon. We bought the Elephant Atta chapati flour brand in July 2012. That was successfully integrated into Westmill Foods. It's had a good first year or slightly above its acquisition case, and well done everyone at Westmill for achieving that. It's been the market for retail sugar has been particularly competitive over the last 12 months, and trading at times has been difficult. Moving across the Atlantic to the United States, ACH, the performance was improved in that marketplace. They did well in America, and for completeness, we relaunched our vegetable oil brand Capullo in Mexico, and that has driven good volume increases. Turning next to our ingredients portfolio, revenue and underlying profit was in line with last year. That's good enough, because last year's figure at 27 million was unacceptably poor. There have been management changes at AB Mauri, and we've seen the green shoots appearing at Mauri in part because of those management changes. We've been investing through the year, and John has taken you through some of the costs of that, in cost reduction but also in growth. And we've also been rationalising operations across the ingredients portfolio. So to go through those in a little bit more detail, we've sold our US whey protein business. We've ceased the manufacture of yeast extracts in the northeast of China. That plant will be turned into a dry yeast plant now. We're better off doing that in northeast China than yeast extracts. And we've restructured in Italy and in India. In particular, we've ceased the manufacture of dry yeast in Italy. We've been able to do that because we've completed and commissioned the dry yeast plant in Mexico. It's a much lower cost operation. We've added dry yeast capacity and cheaper capacity also in China. Two very well delivered projects, one in Shandong, east of Beijing, the other one in Xinjiang, which is the far west of China. That's an expansion of an existing plant. Finally, we have built a new cereal extrusion factory in Indiana in the United States, and we have plans to further expand our enzyme factory in Finland, both those projects to allow further growth in these successful businesses. Turning finally then to Primark. Before I do, it was the day following our last meeting back in April that the factory building at Rana Plaza collapsed, killing some 1,200 people working there. Primark was one of at least 28 international brands sourcing from the Rana Plaza building. We were sourcing from a factory on the second floor, New Wave Bottoms. The accident was truly horrific, great loss of life, many, many injuries beyond that loss of, on top of that loss of life, many of them life-changing. We took our responsibilities very seriously. Our actions in response to it have been widely publicised. It's quite clear, I think, that we're leading the work on long-term compensation for the people affected, just as we led the way on payment of short-term compensation and also on the provision of food aid in the immediate aftermath of the factory. We are also the first UK retailer to join the Accord, which is a group of European retailers which aim to work together to bring improvements in working conditions in the supply chain in Bangladesh. I think if we all do work together, then we have a much better chance of improving realities on the ground than we do as individual retailers. Many retailers source from Bangladesh. It's very hard to find a t-shirt on the high street that doesn't come from Bangladesh. As I say, it's a challenge to all of us whether we sell things cheaply at medium price points or at high price points, and we've simply got to work in a more coordinated, consistent way in order to effect changes which are necessary. Turning back then to the Primark business itself, it really was a remarkable year with profits, operating profits up 44% and sales up 22%. The margins were higher, the sales were obviously higher. We added 25% to our space in continental Europe. We're not far off continental Europe representing 50% of the sales of the UK business. Trading 5% like-for-like growth through the year. Both the autumn, winter and the spring, summer ranges sold really well. And congratulations to the ever stronger buying teams for putting product in the stores that the customers were so excited by. Christmas was very good. The summer months were very good. They built good like-for-likes, came on top of the prior year's excellent like-for-likes. Northern Europe was particularly strong. And like-for-likes in Spain, which were in negative territory on the back of a degree of cannibalization in the first half, went back positive in the second half. The margin improvement then came from three areas, really. Lower cotton costs in the first half. We had a full year of much more normal cotton prices. Because the ranges sold through so well, we had a very low, the lowest ever level of markdown percentage across the group. That was fantastic. And then, and it's an important point, we saw good margins across all our North European businesses, even though they are in their infancy. Store highlights of the year. We added 800,000 square feet. We opened the second store on Oxford Street. The extensions and the refits in the UK and Ireland have been a very important part of the year just gone. Manchester, I'll show you a picture in a moment. Newcastle has doubled in size. Chester has been expanded. Dublin, the Mary Street store now looks absolutely magnificent. Also, the new stores, the first store on our store on the Zeil in Frankfurt, one of the major shopping streets in Germany. The reception there for that shop has been extraordinary, as it has been for the first two stores in Austria, and then six more locations in Spain. In terms of the chart that you've seen before, 10% space added, 32% in northern continental Europe, going from 12 to 17 stores. Iberia, 21% increase through the year, and the UK up 6%. Don't just look at the 6%, look at those store refits. There's more to come. So Leeds Trinity is coming, Cardiff is coming, and sometime in the next couple of years, much more space in Birmingham. Manchester is our poster child for the development of the UK estate, 150,000 square feet, and a coffee shop to boot in it. The real change is in store, the improvement in visual merchandising across Primark in the last few years has been one of the real features of the development of that business, and Manchester being a flagship reflects it all. I wanted to show you now, this is one a store in Holland in Zoetermeer, which opened just a few weeks ago. It could be the east end of Oxford Street, that shop front. It is again testament to the development of that part of the business in just the last few years. The look and feel of a Primark store from the outside is not what it was just a couple of years ago. Go inside it though, and you find just as much, shoppers find just as much value on basic clothing as they ever did. One of the interesting things that we're having to do with Primark at the moment is to increase the size of the price tags, because people find it hard to believe that the prices are where they are, given the quality of the external environment and the internal environment as well. Now, we've never seen this in the UK, but it gives you an indication as just the reception of Primark in Northeast Europe. This is Zoetermeer. And that is a road on the outskirts of Zoetermeer, letting you know how to find your way to the Primark, which has just been opened. Quite extraordinary. Looking forward then a little to Christmas, if you want to look good and sophisticated at a Christmas party coming up, we can certainly do that for you. If you're looking something for your relatives, then we can certainly do that for you as well. I'm delighted to say that North Europeans have seen the light on onesies and Christmas jumpers for the first time this year. Further selling space expansion clearly is in our plans. We expect to add over 1 million square feet in this financial year. We expect to open 13 stores up to Christmas 2013. That's from the start of the year to Christmas, including our first in France, in a shopping centre in Grand Littoral in Marseille. That's our first in France, to be followed by four more through the rest of the year. Clearly, we remain focused on developing our existing business model. We remain great fans of the high street, and we've got a massive opportunity there, clearly in continental Europe, also a lot left in the UK. It's not to say that we're ignoring the online realities of the retail business. Our response has been our new website's non-transactional. It's a great leap forward in our ability to communicate with our customers. If you haven't already seen it, and you may well not have because it only went live last Thursday, I recommend you go and have a look at it. There are three important parts to it. The store locator is much improved and is all iPhone enabled. The two important bits to it are what's new. For the first time, customers can go online on the Primark website and see what is new in store. It was quite extraordinary how many people were checking out the Primark website, spending 10 seconds on it and coming off before, because all they could find was how they applied to get a job there and not much more. So this is really important. The second aspect to it, Primania, is one that we're very excited by. It allows shoppers to post to the Primark website pictures of themselves wearing their new Primark hauls. If the buying teams at Reading and in Dublin are anything to judge by, this will be hugely well received by our customers. finally, then, looking forward into the new financial year, we expect to be adjusted earnings per share will be similar to what they've been in 2013. We expect to see further reduction in profitability at AB Sugar as sugar prices come down. We're going to be enjoying the lower cost of financing, particularly after the repayment of that 20-year-old British Sugar debenture. Stabilisation of ingredients, and perhaps a bit better than that. Further improvements in grocery, particularly but not exclusively in Australia. And then the acceleration of store openings across the Primark markets and, of course, into France. In summary, it's been a great year. We've got a whole lot to keep us busy as well in the year to come. Thank you very much. If we can just fairly rapidly go on to questions.
Jeremy Fialco.
Morning, Jeremy Fialco, Redburn here. Two questions. First one is on Australian grocery. So clearly, you know, some pretty big improvements there. Is this very much down to you having taken costs out versus any sort of underlying improvement in the marketplace here? And I guess the second follow-up from that is, given the current run rate on costs in that business, what is the rough quantum of the profit improvement you'd expect next year? And then the second question is a much broader one. Obviously, in terms of your market value, Primark is implied a very, very substantial percentage. Now, when we look at forecast operating profits for next year, it's going to be getting on for half of the group. Obviously, this is a testament to the success of Primark, but does this bother you in any way that the group is becoming a little bit unbalanced in terms of profit streams and the value of the company?
Let me take those in their order. Most of the improvement in Australia has been the consequence of self-help. Some of it in the cost base in both major businesses. The Don KRC factory has shed a great deal of both operating cost and overhead, and the bakery business too has stripped tens of millions of pounds out of its operating base. The other great work in the year in Australia was the achievement of a much needed price increase in the bread business, where essentially we'd gone 4 years without cost recovery in an environment where labour costs inflate reasonably quickly. So we desperately needed that price rise, and we got it, which was really good. The environment in Australia, as the Australian dollar weakens, some of the pressure on Australian manufacturing will reduce, probably not hugely in our sectors. We're not competing with imported bread, although I did see some Spanish donuts on sale in Australia in my last visit. And the meat business is largely protected by hygiene legislation. But some improvement there. I think while that environmental improvement is certainly welcome, the east coast of Australia is still it's not quite in recession, but confidence levels amongst consumers are low, and consumers have been encouraged for several years to trade down, particularly by some of the retailers. So the short answer is it's been self-help. John, you can, if you want to give a number of what
I won't guide you too closely, Jeremy, but I think a few tens of millions of Australian dollars of improvement, I think, in 14 over 13.
I mean, I think much credit to the management team in Australia. They very much delivered as we expected in 2013, and the year has started well for them into 14. So I think further improvement, very definitely there.
Going on to Primark and the portfolio, I'm not sure I recognise the value of balance in a portfolio. I'm not quite sure what it does for you. There's no sort of counter-cyclical.
Cyclical.
That's the word. Cyclical. Advantages of different parts of the portfolio. We lived for many years with sugar being by far and away the largest part of the group. Everything else was tiddlers.
And so I think we've demonstrated in the past that we're quite comfortable with very large parts of the group, combined with much smaller parts that we still love and can do something for.
Great. Okay. Yeah, Warren now coming.
Good morning, it's Warren Ackerman at SocGen. Can I just ask a question about Primark margins? You've always been quite clear with us that margins will oscillate in a corridor of 10 to 12%, and obviously we're now at the top end of that corridor, the 12%. But given improving mix, the point you made on pricing, the ticket pricing going up, you know, dollar weakness that we've seen recently, you know, benign cotton, you know, should we think that that corridor still stands, or is there some thinking that it could actually go a little bit higher? And I guess what's behind the question is, looking into 2014, would you expect the margin to actually come down? And if so, is there anything to say on the phasing first half, second half on Primark? That's the first question. And then just on
why don't you hold the question? Let's answer a few of those bits.
Our brains are full.
But just one very, very clear thing, and I'll say it. Primark prices on like-for-like items have not increased. What George said, with a slight tongue-in-cheek, was that the size of the sign was bigger, but it wasn't a higher price, Warren. So we're very clear.
What the chief executive meant when he said that.
What the chief executive meant to say was that. So genuinely, there is not like-for-like increase in Primark pricing. But there is a mix improvement, so we're selling more items of a higher ticket item than we did before. And certainly the consumers are giving us permission to do that, with no doubt at all. But be very clear, like for like, no increase in pricing.
I would also be slightly cautious about saying that there is there's a corridor. That is, I think, more sort of deterministic than we really are. The margin is the consequence of the business success, if you like, and of our determination to be the lowest priced in every category in which we have an offer. Historically, you're right, it's been from just below 10, it's been higher than 12, I think, in the past. Our expectation is that because of some currency pressures, it may be a little bit lower next year. The second pressure is that you can't budget or forecast the level of markdowns that we achieved last year. If we get there, fantastic, but you can't stick it into your budget, and therefore you have to increase the markdown percentage in the budgets.
Okay, thank you. And just on sugar, a couple of points on sugar. Could you, John, maybe clarify the impact on UK sugar profits from the conclusion of the negotiations with UK beet farmers? I think it's £4 per tonne has now been agreed a few weeks ago. I think it's more of an issue for 2015, but if you could clarify what the impact of that could be. And then just one for George. Yeah. I mean, given the sugar regime has been clarified now in October 17, would you actually consider making further acquisitions in sugar outside of the EU?
Shall I come on to beet costs first? Absolutely. For the financial year 2014, beet prices are very much in line with 2013. So the very public discussion, shall I describe it, between the NFU and British Sugar related to the year 2015. We've looked at, there's now a price for the beet price of 31.67 pounds per tonne has been agreed. And I think that will add about £30 million of cost in the financial year 15 over 14, everything else being equal.
I think we've got to be cautious for a little while on expanding further AB sugar for a couple of reasons. The first one is we need to get comfortable that we have a competitive cost advantage that we can take to any business that we acquire. The bigger point, and that is that performance improvement methodology, and we need to see that operating for a while. The second one is I think that the increase in sugar production in Europe will change worldwide sugar flows, trade flows, possibly quite substantially. But we don't know by how much, because we don't know how much sugar Europe will produce and whether it ends up as being a major exporter again. And I think it's just time to settle down and work some of that through before we rush off and acquire sugar assets.
Yeah, Jack Gorman.
Thank you. Jack Gorman from Davy. Just to follow up, George, on the performance improvement programme on the sugar side. Apologies if I misquote you, but I think you were talking of maybe tens, perhaps hundreds of millions of opportunity across the division in terms of cost efficiencies. Just wondering what your current thoughts are on that sort of quantum, and in particular, how you see that panning out over the near term. Is there investment required from the group to actually secure some of that cost initiative?
Yes, there is investment required, but it tends to be small-scale projects rather than the sort of investments which have characterised our sugar business in the past, which have been often to north of £100 million. In the budget this year, we've already got tens of millions penciled in for, or inked in for the benefits of that work. And we expect to see that level of improvement increase as we get into these schemes rather than run out.
I think the important thing about the quantum is that it's certainly needed. Part of it would obviously offset the inflationary pressures that you're going to get every year. So it will defray that. But then also with sugar prices coming down, we'll be able to defray some of the impact of that as well. So that's why the fact that the scale of these is so important. It is an important thing for AB Sugar looking forward.
What we're looking for in the end is relative cost advantage.
Yeah. Should we pass it over to Mike Dennis first of all?
Mike Dennis from Cantor Fitzgerald. Just a quick question on the grocery. In terms of the baking business, you talked about margin pressures, yet you talked about, obviously, the volume growth you got from the co-op.
Yeah.
Is that industry going to become a bit like Australia in terms of the fact that now Hovis is basically buying volume in the UK market? You're going to find it very difficult to make a good return on that investment that you just made in Allied. I just want to get your feeling for how you see the UK baking market actually, or bread market actually evolving.
Yes, I don't think that the nature of the UK bread market will change much. It's been like this for years and years and years. I think that we've established a strong position in the market with very reliable production, high-quality bread, and a lower cost base than our major competitors. And again, it is the reality of that lower cost base which I think will give us our return on the investment in the years to come.
Bob Altschmidt.
A couple questions, if I may. It's Bob Altschmidt from Merrill Lynch. Firstly, on Primark, in terms of your expansions, you note 13 by Christmas of this year. So if we think about that in terms of your earlier comments through the course of the year, is that in line or earlier? And how do you see the weighting of store opens as we go through fiscal 14? I guess, second of all, it seems like we're still kind of on track for, call it 1 million square foot per annum for the next 3 years or so in terms of what's out there. Is that a reasonable man assumption? And then I guess lastly on Primark, in terms of your partnership with ASOS, any comments on how that went, why you end it, would you reconsider doing it again, etc.? And then just one last question, if I may, on sugar. Just can you give us an idea of how the development of sugar pricing is coming, how quickly it's coming down vis-a-vis your expectations and market? Thank you.
On Primark, we expect to have a fairly even weighting of store openings first half, second half this year. Last year, we opened almost everything that we opened in the first half. I think we only got one open in the second. Million square feet looking forward, not a bad number. We would hope to do a little bit better than that, I think. There's always uncertainty when you look further out in the opening, the store pipeline.
ASOS.
ASOS. Yep, we learned a lot through ASOS. We learned something about where customer demand is relative to where we place certain ranges. So we learned something about the ranging in different categories and different geographies of store. We learned something about sizing, the importance of consistency of sizing. We've done a lot of good work recently improving that, but we know we've got further to go. We learned, ultimately, what we learned was that we can sell profitably on the high street much cheaper than anyone can do online. We have to keep an eye on that, but that was hugely reassuring, given our commitment to the high street all over Europe. Will we do another trial? I'm not aware of the discussions that are going on at the moment, but the high street is by far and away our focus still.
Then sugar price decrease.
Sugar price decrease. Do you want to handle
that? Yeah. Without sort of giving numbers out, I think there's no doubt that for the marketing year 2014, I think sugar pricing came down further than we would have expected maybe 3 or 4 months ago. I mean, without sort of giving numbers, but certainly well in excess of 10% reduction in those prices.
We were surprised it's come down further in the UK than in much of continental Europe, and that was a surprise.
Okay. Graham Jones. Mm.
Graham Jones from Palmier Gordon. Just sticking with Primark, just on Rana Plaza, could you possibly quantify the cost of the compensation? I mean, my feeling is it's more than just a couple of million pounds. And in terms of the ongoing costs of supporting those families that have been affected, was that provisioned in the operating profit for 2013? And then the second thing on Primark, obviously there's been press speculation about a possible move to the US. Presumably you think you haven't quite covered all of Europe yet, but would you like to give any comment on the opportunity in the US? And then thirdly, on grocery, US corn oil prices are a lot lower year on year. Is there any margin benefit at ACH this year because of that?
Rana Plaza, we've spent about £2 million so far. We don't know what the long-term compensation will cost, because we haven't done the assessments of injury. And until we've done that, we won't know what it's going to cost the business to support those people. John has taken a stab at a number in the accounts this year. It'll be wrong, but we got to put something. We got to put something in. We're not going to.
Don't know how to take that. Right?
No. No, but I mean, sorry. Let me repeat the point. We don't know what the cost is. We don't know what the cost is.
Yes.
And the important thing is that we get the compensation right, not that we set a budget for it. What was the next part?
But we've made a good provision in the 2013 numbers for it anyway. Yeah. So that's the important thing.
Was it straight to the US?
To the US.
Oh yeah, we've got 10 stores in Germany. We've got 161 in the UK. We've got none in France. We'll have 5 by the end of the year. There's a lot of, you know, the priority is quite clearly continental Europe. We have appointed can't remember his exact title, but someone to look around at new markets, the adjacent markets in Europe. Are his first priority. You know, what does Italy look like? What does Scandinavia look like? Is there an opportunity in Luxembourg? Yes, but probably only one. Nothing in Eastern Europe. What does Poland look like? There are a lot of questions. But this business in Northern Europe in particular is nascent at best. Nothing in France. So that's the priority.
And grocery, US corn.
Yeah, it's come down quite a lot. It's not only the reduction in the absolute level that's been important. It's been the reverse. Sorry, it's been the inversion of the traditional relationship between corn oil and soy. Our competitors are soy oil brands, so Crisco and Wesson. They've also always had a cost advantage based on soy being 3 or 4 cents cheaper than corn. Corn is now sitting about 2 cents below soy. Whether that'll last or not, I don't know. There has been a little bit of margin improvement over the last 18 months in the Mazola brand, partly as a consequence, partly as a result of other things too.
Thanks. Charles Pick of Numis. Three questions, please. Firstly, regarding China, is it possible to quantify the loss, please, last year? Just trying to get at what the underlying figure was, X that $22 million that was charged for the two factory mothballings. Secondly, regarding CapEx, it was mentioned that some of the CapEx at Primark was deferred. Yeah. Is it possible to sort of quantify what that magnitude was and also what the CapEx at Primark and the food operations might be in the current financial year? Yeah. And third question, please. I think in the past you've indicated the margins at Primark are roughly similar between the various geographies. Yes. Was that again the case last year?
John, you can handle all three.
Right. Well, let's, okay. So let's take them from the beginning. So the China losses, so China sugar, underlying in excess of 40 million loss. Okay. So that's the underlying loss, £40 million loss in 2013. We think that will come down somewhat in 2014 for the reasons that George has given. In terms of capital expenditure, I thought I was really trying to give you, Charles, really a sort of a feel for where I thought the CapEx was going to go. A good sort of 50 million sort of coming out of 13 into 14. So you notice that I think mid 300s as a capital expenditure, at the very least for Primark, maybe getting towards 400 for the 2014 year, and then a bit less on food. So giving the total probably in the high 600s. And sorry, the final one was on.
It was about the margins between the various geographic regions for Primark. Were they again similar?
Yes, I mean, I think one of the things that I think George put up on the slide, which I think is very important, is that we've looked very carefully at the margin, particularly in Northern Continental Europe. Now, structurally, labour costs are higher there than certainly in the UK, and the team have worked very, very hard in terms of, getting an acceptable margin structure. Without absolutely breaking it down, in Northern Continental Europe, we've got double-digit margins, a bit less than the UK. But that really is very, very important because that's the base that we're building on as we go forward. So, people say, is it dilutive as you grow forward? A bit, but not an awful lot, though. Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned labour costs across Europe being slightly higher. I noticed that there's a government initiative to try and get living wages throughout the UK. Where do you stand on that, please?
Cost increases. I mean, labour is an important part of our cost base. If labour costs go up, someone's going to have to pay for it. So I would have thought that. It depends on the level, but a substantial increase in labour costs in UK retailing would, not just us, but everyone, would lead to marked increase in consumer prices, whether that's in food or clothing. I'm not going to speculate, give you my view whether I think it's a good thing or not. I just think that there are consequences. All these promises have to be paid for somewhere.
Yeah. Warren, did you want to follow up?
Yeah, hi. I have a couple of follow-ups, Warren Ackerman at SocGen. I mean, you did 5% like-for-like at Primark in the year, which was obviously fantastic relative to your competition. You do have a very tough comp in the first quarter. I think you did 9% or 11% if you include the extra space productivity. Would you expect the like-for-like growth in the current year, therefore, to be a bit more kind of second-half weighted, or is the comment that the autumn-winter range being very encouraging suggesting that you're still going to do a decent number in the first quarter despite the tougher comp? Yeah. And then the second question is just on the earnings guidance for the year, John. You're saying kind of flat earnings for the years 2014, which is kind of 99p. That is, I think, a bit lower than consensus, which is about 102, 103p. Obviously, sugar's coming down. But you've got other things coming back. Some of the one-offs are reversing. You should expect to see some decent profit growth in Primark and grocery. I was wondering whether you could just discuss some of the moving parts on that comment for us. That would be useful. Thanks.
Sure. George, you want to do like-for-likes?
Yeah, I think like-for-likes and Primark will be second half weighted, particularly sitting here now after a very warm autumn and lapping. John will probably sort of tell me I shouldn't tell you, but period one last year, like-for-likes were plus 20. Now, we've just had period one. It's quite hard to lap that with, you know, good further growth. So, it'll be second half weighted.
What do you mean period one?
Sorry, September.
First four weeks. September to the middle of October.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
Second half weighted. John, do you want to...
Yeah. So, yes, talking about the guidance for next year, first of all, I don't expect people particularly to change on the back of the guidance that is actually there. I think we're not giving anything new in terms of a sugar outlook or for any of the businesses that we had given at the pre-close trading update. So, first of all, let me make that one very clear. The word... that is not used there is flat. The word that is used there is similar to 2013. So Warren, I think that allows a little bit of flexibility within a few percent of where it is. So I'd be surprised if people move their numbers very much from where they are for 2014.
That's just being slightly churlish, John, on the financing costs being a little bit lower because of the debenture.
Yes.
Could you maybe kind of quantify?
A few tens of millions lower. So, you know, just like we had a big quantum this year, we'll have another good quantum into 14. It's great. A very, very good move. Robin Asquith,
JP Morgan. Just a question about grocery margins.
Yeah.
Obviously moved from 5% to 6%. I think in the past you've talked about perhaps they should move to 8%, 9%, 10%. Is that something you could envisage next 2 to 3 years? There seems to be a lot of more momentum in the business, etc. A lot of things coming right.
Yeah. Three very different situations going on. Firstly, the growth of Twinings, Ovaltine, Patax, Blue Dragon, Jordans, and Ray Vita, where the margins are already double digit. So the growth of those businesses at those sorts of margins relative to the rest of the business will determine the average of the whole lot. Secondly, the continuation of the improvement in Australia. But the Australian businesses, I mean, meat businesses and bread businesses never run at double-digit margins. But there's lots of improvement there which will bring the average up. And the third is the bread business in the UK, which, again, we would never expect to have a double-digit margin. But we would expect to see further improvement in the profitability there. How the average all works out, I don't know. We would hope to see further progress from six.
Just given the timing, is there maybe one more question, or are we through?
Okay. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much indeed.
Appreciate it.